Penguin Random House Audio presents Lady Killer, a novel by Catherine Wood. Read for you by Hallie Ricardo and Marcella Black. For Sierra and Jade. Love all, trust a few, do wrong to none. William Shakespeare. All's well that ends well. His stories were good because he imagined them intensely, so intensely that he came to believe them. Patricia Highsmith, the talented Mr. Ripley.
Prologue. New York City, March. The night before Hugo Torres's funeral, a cheetah escaped its enclosure at the Bronx Zoo and devoured a warthog. Had the victim been a more charming animal, say, a koala or a monkey, perhaps there would have been some level of outrage directed at the cheetah. But, as it was, the whispers among the mourners assembled in the cathedral on Park Avenue the next morning were a sympathy not for the warthog, but for the cheetah. After all, cheetahs were predators, not meant for a life in captivity. The cat had only done what it was born to do. The turnout for the memorial service was impressive. The church, packed to the gills with Manhattan's finest, decked in their best bereavement attire, rendered ant-like by the towering stone pillars and soaring vaulted ceiling. Diamonds glittered on beds of black lace as mourners craned their necks to get a glimpse of the mahogany casket, their morbid curiosity stifled by the closed lid draped in more roses than a Kentucky Derby winner. The invitation had said 9:30, but it wasn't until the church bell struck 10 that the family stepped through the massive doors, ushered inside by a gust of bitingly cold wind that chilled the back third of the church. Everyone turned to watch the spectacle, carefully concealing their fascination as the solemn group proceeded up the marble nave. First in line was the third and current wife, Melody, a waxy-looking French-Canadian of 50. Who had a frigid personality and a frosty relationship with her husband's exes and their children. Her bone-thin frame was draped in black wool and ivory-colored pearls. The hand of the 6-year-old son she shared with Papa Hugo gripped tightly in hers. Everyone murmured how awful it was for the poor boy to lose his father at such a young age. But such were the risks of a May-December romance. It's fair to say the congregation was universally disappointed that the crazy second wife wasn't in attendance. Of course, they knew it wasn't okay to call people who had been institutionalized for mental illness crazy. Could you even say that word anymore? But privately, that was what they thought of her. In her day, Caroline had been a talented painter, not to mention very beautiful, with a habit of flirting with husbands who didn't belong to her. Now she lived in a sanatorium in Switzerland, like it was the 19th century or something, neatly packed away for unbecoming behavior. Her daughter Gia was just as stunning as her mother had been, and just as much trouble, elite circles would say. She was a staple of the society pages, flitting from boyfriend to boyfriend between various creative endeavors that included a salacious but surprisingly well-written memoir, and a perfume she loved too much to sell to the public. Today, she was wearing a skin-tight black satin dress with long sleeves and a completely open back, her eyes hidden by giant black sunglasses, her long brunette locks gathered into a bun at the nape of her neck, clutching the arm of her brother, Benicio. Benny had wavy dark hair like his sister's, almost long enough on top to tuck behind his ears, and they both shared their father's deep-set eyes and olive skin, and their mother's artistic sensibilities. The mothers in the crowd registered Benny's bare ring finger and pinched their eligible daughters, who blushed, but for once didn't protest. Sadly, ever since Benny's first screenplay was turned into a runaway hit film, he was perpetually accompanied by some actress or other. And to the chagrin of all the mothers, his current girlfriend, the star of a television show about witches, would be stapled to his side by the time he reached the reception. Notably missing were the British first wife and the three grown children she shared with the deceased. It was no secret that she regarded Americans as gauche and had elected to hold a competing memorial service in London, which was, ironically, rather gauche. When the family reached the first row, Melody allowed Gia and Benny to sit first, then took her place at the end of the pew, leaving a discernible gap between herself and her stepchildren. Gia's best friend Abby, the daughter of the family's former chef, leaned forward from the second row and put her hand on Gia's shoulder. Thanks to Papa Hugo's generosity, Abby had gone to boarding school with Gia and the daughters and sons of many in the congregation. She was petite and reserved, pleasant-looking, but not gorgeous, an unobtrusive interloper in their rarefied circles. And though she was better turned out than she had been in high school, her mousy hair, now a smart, shoulder-length blonde, her glasses replaced by contacts that revealed large green eyes. Her middle-class clothes and bearing would have rendered her nearly invisible to this set, were her face at 18 not burned into their minds. Scandal was the wrong word for what had happened. Shocking violence was more like it. The assault Abby had suffered at the hands of Gia's stalker was shocking. That much was certain, and violent. But real tragedy had been narrowly averted when Gia stepped in, saving Abby's life by extinguishing that of her attacker. The news cycle seized on the story. Heiress kills homicidal maniac and saves best friend's life. They'd all seen the television interviews Gia gave and read the memoir she wrote about it afterward too, of course. Though some accused her of profiting off tragedy, the book had been a moderate success and would have provided her the opportunity for a career as an author if she had so desired. Alas, 10 years later, her publisher was still waiting on her follow-up. Everyone stared at the gold-framed oil portrait of Papa Hugo displayed on an easel next to his coffin, as the priest rightly declared him an icon, beloved by those close and far. It was warm in the church, and minds began to wander as the priest went on to summarize how Papa Hugo had made his money in oil, but poured it back into green energy, turning Cleanergy Corp into one of the largest clean fuel companies in the world before he retired to focus on the nonprofits he supported. And that is why Hugo Torres chose to donate his entire $500 million fortune to the Torres Foundation. This got their attention. The Torres Foundation had been founded by Papa Hugo and his second wife, the crazy artist, and therefore the main causes it funded were the environment, which was his passion, and the arts, which was hers. Donating his fortune to the foundation was admirable, of course, but what of his children? Suddenly, the congregation's focus was once again on the front row of the church, as they desperately tried to make out, from the tilt of a head or the sight of a face, whether his family had known they would be cut out of the will. Husbands and wives gave each other meaningful glances as they bowed their heads for a final prayer before everyone, even those who had thought 5 minutes ago they might skip the wake in favor of a round of golf, headed over to the ballroom at the Waldorf for the reception.
Abby. Chapter 1. 5 months later. The invitation arrived in the mail without notice, as was customary for missives from Regina Gia Highsmith Torres. My best friend had always enjoyed the element of surprise, which, paradoxically, meant that nothing she did was all that surprising. To me, anyway. The battered red envelope was marked airmail and covered in stamps, the return address that of her family's Greek Islands home. I felt a wave of nostalgia, picturing the view from the balcony of what had been my bedroom when I used to visit, rocky hills tumbling down to an azure sea. I could almost hear the song of the cicadas, smell the leather of the couch in the dusky library, taste the earthy olive oil pressed from the trees in the grove. An icy blast of air conditioning brought me back to the present as I stepped into the elevator of my modern high-rise apartment building. The August heat was no joke in Atlanta, no matter the time of day, but the air conditioning was always shockingly cold. I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?